is Newsraid with Adrian Lacey talking to the socialist candidate, Danny Lambert.
Now, you are representing the socialists.
The Socialist Party.
The Socialist Party.
Socialist Party of Great Britain.
Okay, now, you set the scene for me off air. I think it'd be really useful for someone listening now for you to set the scene. Again, I'll give you 30 seconds or so to say what the party's about right now, if you would, please.
Well, firstly, I'm not a politician. I mean, I'm in the politics of anti-politics. Our organisation proposes a society where the means and instruments for producing and distributing wealth are owned in common and administered by the democratically by and in the interest of the whole community. A society where the industrial natural resources of our planet are the common heritage of all human beings. And at the moment, they're not. And that's one of the reasons why in our society we have rich and poor, because the means and instruments for producing wealth are only put into operation when there's a profit in it for those that own them. So we want a society of common ownership where we not only live for ourselves, but we produce for ourselves just purely and simply on the basis of human need. Instead of producing profit, we produce just to satisfy human needs. And we are eminently capable of doing so in a society with the technology that we have at our disposal. The potential is amazing. If only we were to realise who we really were, or really are rather, members of the human family, and constructed for ourselves a society where that identity is acknowledged, a society where we bring according to our ability and we take according to our needs.
Okay, I think you might have just gone over the 30 seconds.
Sorry about that. It's a big subject.
You've set the scene. If that's the case, and you want to introduce this, the society, and world society, if I can use that term,
exactly.
Why is it not more popular to ask an awkward question? Why are you not voted in already?
Well, you see, the word socialism has some very, very bad connotations. I mean, we're left with the legacy of the failed experiments of these dictatorships, you know, the Soviet Union, China, Albania, North Korea.
And even Hitler borrowed the term national socialist.
You know, I mean, you know, what we have to do every day when we speak about socialism, every opportunity we get, we have to sort of like wash the mud off first so that people can get a clear idea of what socialism is. Socialism is a democratic society. If it's not democratic, it isn't society. It isn't socialism. And what we mean by democracy is a society where all socially relevant information is available to everybody. So people, therefore, can make an informed choice on the issues that present themselves.
Couldn't you do a nifty bit? I know this might stick in the throat, otherwise you'd have done it already, but I'm bound to ask. Couldn't you do a nifty bit of rebranding and just not use the term socialism if it's so poisoned?
Well, you see, you know, people are not stupid. They would you know, take one look at us and go, oh, this sounds nice, and then they would find out we were the Socialist Party. And they said, why did you change your name? I mean, we're stuck with it. And also, it's kind of a test, in as much as, you know, we need people to dump their prejudices, the prejudice we have for our fellow human beings. I mean, everybody sort of thinks that the rest of the world out there is out there to mug them. Whereas we say, I mean, and I've discovered this for myself on my travels, you know, I've been all around the world a couple of times, all around Europe, I've worked all over this country in heavy construction. The vast majority of people on this planet are decent. So therefore, if you want the means to equal the ends of a decent world, there it is. So as I say, we're stuck with the name. And once people come understand what real socialism is, as for the likes of William Morris, for example, then, as I say, they'll dump their prejudices.
Now, William Morris, dating back to the Victorian era,
yes,
if my rusty history is correct. But why should anyone trust you this time round? Why should I or they believe it's not going to be yet another failed experiment, to use your phrase, about the Soviet Union? So,
well, referring back to William Morris and the remarks I made some moments ago, speaking as a politician. Socialism can only be democratic. So therefore, in a democratic society, the people would therefore come of age, become adults, and therefore deal with social responsibility in the only way it can be dealt with, and that is to share it. Can you repeat the question again?
There's one or two distractions here, and I'm famous for forgetting my last question. Something along the lines of, why should anyone trust you this time round? Why should they believe the Socialist Party you represent? Why would that not be yet another failed experiment under that name?
Well, I mean, you've only got to look at the structure of our party. Our party is totally democratic. We have the most democratic constitution of any political party anywhere.
But that can come with problems, can't it? Decision-making. I mean, people have levelled that at Lib Dems at various stages, usually from outside the party. They can't make decisions.
Well, I mean, if you see, our party, as I say, is a single-issue party. And we're trying to achieve is socialism, and of course
you make it sound very simple. Socialism, you've just listed loads of things that it is. How can that be a single issue? I mean, a single issue party can be we want this bus route to go through this particular town. That's very focused. Socialism, you're talking about an entire different way of running the planet, by your own admission, aren't you?
Well, I mean, just in a way we run the planet after we've had the socialist revolution, because that would take a complete transformation of our society, then it's going to be up to those people at the time, not me, not our party, to decide on the issues at the time that has to be confronted. So that's a democratic outlook.
Surely
the other thing, to get socialism, I'll echo William Morris, the means must equal the ends. The only way you can get socialism is to make socialists, to convince enough people, a majority of people, were prepared to shoulder the responsibilities and put in the work to bring it about.
He might look at today being, 100 years on from whenever he was last with us and say, hang on, you're not doing a very good job at converting people, are you?
Well, neither did he. Neither did he, but nevertheless, he never gave up. You see, the thing is, look, it's like this. I see it very, very simply. The human species is more than the human species. It's a human family. Genetics, paleoarchaeology have proved that beyond doubt.
But families can be dysfunctional, can't they? With lots of argumentative members.
Of course they can, and I'll explain why, if I'm allowed to carry on. We are a human family. Now, in a family that functions, as I've said before, we bring according to our ability, and we take according to our needs. We live in a society where that ethic isn't acknowledged. So therefore, we live in a dysfunctional society. And a dysfunctional society must produce dysfunctional people. You see what I mean? We human beings are social products. So it's the quality of any product is determined by the quality of the productive process. What amazes me about us human beings is that we behave so well in a society of dog-eat-dog, war of all against all, where we're all competing for artificially scarce resources.
But if it's producing dysfunctional people, notwithstanding what you just said, I raise my hand at being highly fallible. We'd be here all evening talking about my faults, but that would include socialists as well, surely, being dysfunctional.
Well, you see, the thing is that all human beings are conditioned by their situation, which is what I've just alluded to. Now, the great thing about us human beings is we can recognise that. And once we recognise that, we can start examining our situation, we can start examining our conditioning, and then go on not only to recondition ourselves, we can then go on to recondition our situation, like I'm trying to do now. You see, we human beings are not just acted upon, we are active agents in our society. So therefore, as I'm doing, we can take the opportunity to try and change things and create a functional society. We can realise why the world is in such a mess, why society is in such a mess, and do something about it.
But you talked in passing, almost as though it was a very easy project, about a socialist revolution. First, in a very few words, as few words as possible, please, just to make it clear to people listening, not because I like cutting in, what is a social revolution in a few words?
Well, a socialist revolution has to be a peaceful revolution, because it's like anything else. If you want to build a beautiful, robust structure, you have to use robust materials and build beautifully. And therefore, if you want to have a peaceful society, you have to create that society peacefully. A democratic society has to be created democratically.
So say I've got three Rolls Royces, if only, in the garage, and two swimming pools at home, whatever. Have I got nothing to fear, then, if it's going to be a peaceful revolution? Am I going to...
Well, of course not. But you see, you've just alluded to something else. We live in a society where we judge ourselves by what we have and what we've been able to take.
It is a yes-no question with respect, though.
Huh?
It's a yes-no answer.
You would have nothing
to
fear. No. We're not in any way proposing that we line people up against the wall. Everybody is included in the socialist revolution, regardless of social class. Well, there'll be no classes after our socialist revolution, regarding previous social class.
Would that mean we were all, in a way, working class, though?
No, you can only have a working class when you have an owning class. When you have a classless society, people cease to be workers. They become human beings. And they live as human beings. And of course, human beings are natural workers, and they can work it out for themselves. If nobody works, nobody lives. If we all work well, everybody lives well.
But surely there'll always be some jobs which are incredibly unglamorous and that no one wants to do. Not lining up to be a loo attendant, for instance.
Well, you see, the thing is, let's face it, if all the capitalists went on strike tomorrow for a fortnight, nothing essential would happen. If all the cleaners and the loo attendants went on strike tomorrow, so civilization would break down. You see,
but that's not really to address the point, is it?
If you allow me to go on, you're cleaning up after ourselves. It's not just civilized work, and it's carrying out, it's civilizing. These things have to be done, and people who've grown up, people who are adult, because that's what we're looking for, an adult society that can take responsibility for our children, and 40,000 die every day for the want of some food, some clean drinking water, some easily available medicine. We'll be a society where they'll realise that these things have to be done, and we'll share them out.
Would we still have money as we know it?
No, certainly not. Why would you need money in a society where everything is owned in common? You see, the great thing about abolishing money is that then you don't have to have, like you have in capitalism, banking, insurance, taxation, advertising, money lending, debt collecting, police, prisons, armies, navies, air forces, military industrial complexes, stock exchanges, charities, pensions, weights and measures, trading standards. All this work essential to reproduce capitalism every day absorbs around 80% of social effort and produces not one stick of usable wealth.
So okay, that's a nice party piece, if you'll permit me.
So what that means is that in a society as such, it's four times more expensive to sell something than it is to make. It's a practical proposition. And because of that, we're so busy taking care of business, we don't have time to take care of ourselves. A socialist society where we just produce for use, all that useless, unnecessary toil involved with capitalism will be pointless. So instead of just 20% of us producing the food, clothing, shelter, medicine, etc., there'll be 100% of us available.
Okay, some people will share your vision. Some won't, of course.
Exactly.
Some might like the sound, or quite a few people might even like the sound of the end, where you envisage yourself being, the sunny uplands, if I can call them that. But they won't identify how we get there from here. You've talked in passing about a socialist revolution. We've got all of 3 minutes on these big, weighty issues. Say I want some work done in the sunny uplands, this future socialist post-revolution type world, and I don't have the skills myself, no such thing as money. How do I go about getting something done? I mean, I'm useless at DIY, so say I want some plumbing done or something like that. To practical things, goes on there?
Well, from each according to ability, to each according to... Now, you might not be good at DIY. Well, I am. But you might be good at something that I appreciate. So while you're doing something that I appreciate, I'll come and help out doing the DIY. I mean, to be creative is to be human, as William Morris pointed out. Human beings with absolutely nothing creative to do find their lives diminished. And of course, you know, in a society where we've got rid of all the useless, unnecessary toil, well, we'd only have to work a couple of days a week. That's socially creative, committed, voluntary work in the company of fellow volunteers in conditions that we arrange for ourselves.
How do you arrive at that calculation? Where do you get the couple of days a week
from? If you instead of having just 20% of workforce doing something useful and creative, and then... you have 100%, well, obviously the workload's going to diminish on each individual. And the other thing is, instead of producing all the tat and shoddy goods that capitalism has produced, stuff that's designed to wear out, to break down, to become obsolete, to be made over and over again, to keep the profits rolling in for those that own the means of producing, there'd be no reason to produce anything other than the very best of everything. And in a world, to do otherwise would be stupid. And with the technology we have at our disposal, that is eminently feasible.
Well, there are a lot of companies and people representing companies who would say, well, they're making the very best already. I mean, I touched on Rolls Royces. They're not just thrown together. Yeah. They're not tat, are they?
Oh, no, exactly. But they're only available to people who can pay. You see, as I was saying, we live in a society dominated by the market.
But what if 6 billion people in your post-socialist revolution world want Rolls Royces? They think, well, I'll have the very best that's going. Someone's got to mediate. Hang on, there aren't enough worldly resources, ecological resources, for everyone to have a Rolls Royce. So someone's got to say, hang on, you're having a Rolls Royce, you're not, or no one has one. How does that work?
Well, you see, a society that's come of age with actual adults making decisions, well, they'll realise that it's not what you have, what you've been able to take, what you own and exclusively you can deny others access to. What you are is what you share, what you bring, how you cooperate, what you pass on, the amount of joy you can bring in society. You see, we live in a society that judges what you have.
Yeah, but the society's not going to forget how to make cars, and it's not going to not need some ability to get around, is it?
Well, of course. Obviously, human beings.
But you ducked my question with respect.
Well, repeat your question and I'll get to it.
Yes, it's about the Rolls-Royces. I use that just as an illustration. Maybe there'll be no such thing as Rolls-Royce in your post-socialist revolutionary world. But, you know, I can only picture it, and people listening can only picture it probably from where we are as a starting point, because that's where you would have to start from. It's where you do have to start from. Say I want a Rolls-Royce. I get one, drive it around, fantastic. It hasn't cost me anything because there's no such thing as money. What about everyone else wanting one?
Well, you see, you know, for you to have a Rolls-Royce in a socialist society, you can't make one. You're useless at DIY, right?
Too right.
So you can't make one. So what you'll have to do is you'll have to persuade the workers with the skills to make one for you.
That's going to be hellishly complicated. Well, is that what you want?
Exactly, because the people with the skills necessary to make you a Rolls-Royce will probably think, being grown-ups, that they could employ their talents, their creativity, doing something more productive, more useful, more human.
But they might not. They might be very satisfied. Well, anyway, we're going to have to leave
it
there.
Well, in that case, we're not going to have a socialist society.
Okay, well, there's a thing from a socialist. Thank you very much for coming in, Dan.
Thank
it's been a delight speaking to you.
I appreciate it.
And all the very best.
Thank you.